This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Welcome, everybody, to the next episode of Indie Comic Book Noise. It's your faithful LA Rabbit here in Los Angeles, joined by everybody's two top Canadians.
Top Canadians. Oof.
That's Whirlwind X, Kevin.
The Ottawa Otter silence for some reason.
I don't have a nickname.
And Phil the Ottawa Otter.
No, I'm just Phil.
Yes, it reminds me of those signs you see by the roadside, hard Phil wanted.
You're really trying to push this nickname on me. I'm just Phil.
It's never soft Phil, it's always just hard Phil.
Yeah, they always want hard Phil wanted. I don't know why.
Hey, you've been talking.
But we're back after some interruptions. It's been a busy and exciting summer.
We're a week late.
And I believe that Kevin has had some comic book related adventures he'd like to talk to us about.
I think you did too.
Yeah, but I mean, yours is more.
Let's not fight over this.
Related to comic books. No,
really, Andrew, you have the regular exciting adventures like every weekend.
I can make one up.
Yes, I feel like just making some up now because I'm like, yes, I went to Regina and bought some comics. I just feel like doing that one week.
Yeah, but didn't you go to an exposition regarding people who are fanatical about properties?
I did go to an expo. And I guess I had an all right time. Not entirely.
Fan Expo Toronto, Canada. Because I know he's going to be cryptic. Go on.
Yes, Fan Expo Canada in Toronto. Yes, let's get that out of the way.
The third best con in North America.
Best or biggest?
Third best.
Third best.
Yep.
Maybe.
But I don't know for sure because I haven't been to the other two.
Did you go to this one, Phil?
No, I skipped this one. I seem to be going every 2 years now.
Yeah, it was probably the year to skip.
Well, for you, maybe, but that's because you don't have a wide variety of things you like.
So I'm wide enough. If you would have been there, though, it would have been an awesome show.
I know. It's true.
So many people were missing. Like, I don't mean guests. I mean, like, people I know in the area or whatever. They're like, since it was on Labor Day weekend, it's like it screwed everything up. And then it's like... it's just like,
plus people stop going because they get pissy about lines, but I don't know. I've never had a problem with lines.
Yeah, but usually people go for meetups and everything, but it's like people like, oh, I can't make it because of this or that, or oh, I had an emergency. So it's like plans were crumbling all over the place. And then I'm like, well, this is kind of bad. And then I couldn't only go for like two and a half days. And like, that's not really any fault of the convention. Except for, you know, the Labor Day thing. But all the other stuff was, like, centered, like, around other activities I would be doing that aren't con-specific, but...
So the show was a three-day show, in other
four
words?
Four-day.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you only went to two of those days?
Yeah, I planned to go on Friday, but the traffic was so bad that I couldn't even get there before the box office closed, so I was like, well... I decided to go to a used bookstore like before the dinner that night instead because I'm like, with this traffic, there was no way it was going to happen.
I find you only need 2 days at a con, really, anyway. Like,
yeah, I was kind of done by you know, Sunday. I'm like, ugh. But that's probably because I wasn't hanging out with anyone, too. Like, if you have a whole gang to... buy stuff with and do stuff with that and go to a lot of panels, like, it makes things more exciting.
Yeah, that's why I didn't go, because when my friend Jim doesn't go, it's just not the same for me, because we're into all the same stuff, so I don't have to entertain him, so he's a fun guy to go with, like, when we go around the con and stuff.
And even McDade was supposed to be there, But I'm like, I didn't even run into him on Sunday. I'm like, where was he? I like totally missed him. I'm like, man, just
but nothing. That's not out. What people want to hear. People want to see, what did you find indie?
What did I find indie? There's a little indie publisher that started in the 1930s called Archie Comics.
That's not indie.
Okay. Archie's good.
No, for our
afterlife with Archie. If people don't know,
anything that's not Marvel and DC is fair game for this podcast.
I think if you look at market share, that's a pretty fair. They're still pretty indie.
Well,
no way.
Maybe not if you have in the supermarket when you have that little area.
Exactly, they've hit supermarkets. Comics can't even hit supermarkets.
Yeah, but how many? Who most of us just read those while we're standing in line, then you put them back in the rack before you check out.
No, I don't even acknowledge them. I've totally deleted Archie Comics out of my system. Oh,
so you have no love for Afterlife with Archie now?
No, that's the best, but that's it.
Did you know that's coming out in magazine format in October, like those old horror magazines from the 70s?
I'll recollect that.
Yeah.
I've got it in that little collection, and I like it that way. It's good for me.
So anyways, the title that I'm speaking about is The Fox by Dean Haspiel and Mark Waid. So I don't know if they're...
My eye.
I think they're planning to do another volume. So this is, I believe, 5 issues. And it's called Freak Magnet. So maybe on a future episode. So I thought, this was 50% off, something like that. I'm like, I definitely have to pick this up. And it even has some... extra stuff by J.M. DeMatteis? Is that how you pronounce it?
I think so, yeah.
But he has some additional stories.
Although
I've heard
DeMatteis as well, but that's the way it works.
And one of my, I guess this counts. It was originally by DC, but it's put out by Dark Horse now. When I was at the used bookstore trying to rustle up something cool, I meant to go back a second time, but when I arrived there Sunday, it had closed by 8. The one day it closes early. But before the convention, I managed to pick a Bloodhound.
That's what I was going to guess. Either that or Fallen Angel.
Yeah, because it was $5. And I'm like, I know there's a one issue missing in here, but I'm like, it's $5. I'm like, I can't really go wrong.
Yeah.
And did you go to any of the programming at the con, or you just walked the floor?
I went to a sketch duel. Because I thought the programming wasn't the greatest. And then I had missed some of the programming Friday. So, I don't go to a lot of the publisher things anymore. Because it's like, what are we going to do? Like, Marvel's is, hey, we're bringing back Alpha Flight. Oh, just kidding. So,
Well, all it is they're telling you what's coming out in previews the next Wednesday.
Yeah, and I can read that online. So, if there's, some good panel about something else, last year. I think it was last year. They had a Chew panel, so something that's more creator specific, I'll go to. So or the sketch duels are always a good time. So,
who was dueling?
Oh, this is a story. Because they originally had two guys dueling, but one of them canceled for the show, so you only had Azurar. And I'm like, that's good enough for me. I don't know who the substitute was going to be. But it was Del Mundo was the... he's currently on Elektra. So he was dueling. And they were, kind of... I guess you could say newish artists. Certainly not of an older generation. So they were doing their stuff and everything. And they're like, oh, we got erasers and we don't know what we're really doing. This is kind of interesting. And all of a sudden, Neil Adams walks in. I knew he was at the con, but I'm like, well, this is kind of strange. I'm just like, oh my God, it's Neil Adams. And then he's like, so how does this thing work here? And he totally takes over the room, the whole panel.
Did he sketch too?
Yeah, it was weird. He was saying, well, what do you guys have, how come you have erasers up there? And they're now feeling all awkward. They're like, oh, it's Neil Adams. And they're, Neil Adams is picking up a pen and, what did he have? I think he had a pencil, but then he just started basically just throwing down ink on the page and everything. And he's just like, yeah, I don't need an eraser. Obviously, if you've been drawing for 50 years or whatever, I assume you'd be pretty comfortable with that. You just let things fall where they may.
Oh, fuck yeah. Man, he's still good. I saw him last year, San Diego. He was in one of the quick draw sketches. He can still put it down, man.
So it was so weird, though, because I'm like, is he seriously going to go up there, sit down, and start sketching with everyone? Like, there's nothing on the schedule. I'm like, I don't know if this is something he does where he shows up at other sketch duels or whatever. But I'm like, that made it, like, totally worth the while.
Hell yeah. I take it, is it like the ones down here where they usually auction the stuff off for charity or whatever at the end?
No, this is, you get tickets when you walk into the room, and they just draw your ticket, and you get it.
Oh my god, that's even better.
Yeah, so I'm like, if you can get to a lot of sketch duels, hopefully you'll win something, like, awesome. Like, some of them, they just do, like, one sketch during the whole hour, and some of them, they're just doing quick sketches the whole time, and they're, like, drawing 20.
So this is how you got the Neil Adams Batman.
I wish.
Right? This is how the story ends?
I wish. I think that came up in a question where they're like, what was the weirdest thing or whatever? And then he's just like, Batman Odyssey. And then I'm like, yeah, that would be pretty weird. But yeah, he was sort of like, I don't know. It wasn't like he was intimidating the younger guys, but he was sort of like, well, why are you guys taking so long on that one sketch? And he's like getting them to do another sketch. He's like, oh, we got 5 minutes. We got 15 minutes. Come on, let's do another one. What are you guys waiting for? So yeah, he was just taking over the whole thing. He was telling stories about Stan Lee and like everyone in the industry. And it was like, I'm like, oh my God, this is a hoot. This is awesome.
Sounds like
a holler.
And you sounded down about this whole convention. That sounds like a pretty worthwhile.
It's amazing.
Spend the time, man.
I've never had a bad Sunday, time though. Yet.
Like, after Saturday, I'm like, I bought a lot of stuff, but, the meetup disintegrated, and I felt like I was done, like, at that point. And then you get to this panel on Sunday, and I'm like, whoa, I'm, like, re-energized. So, yeah, it was pretty awesome. And then people were asking, they just sort of go through a bunch of questions while they're drawing, and the other guys just sort of let Adams talk and everything. And then it's just sort of funny because he's sort of like, I'm Neil Adams, but I don't want to brag too much. And then someone's like, well, why don't one of you go up on the, like, there's a screen to show the progress for your artwork. And it's like, why doesn't one of you go on like the screen so we can see it in progress? And he's like, well, I don't want to show off too much to these guys.
Neil Adams is kind of wacky, though, eh?
Like, he is, but very entertaining.
Yeah, he can tell a good story.
Yeah. So, like, they ask him, like, oh, what's your, like, favorite script to get or something? And he's like, well, I like doing my own stuff and everything like that. But he's like, yeah, I like the Stan Lee scripts. So he starts telling the story about Stan Lee where it's, like, Stan Lee's like, yeah, that's a good idea. You go and do that. And then Stan would come in later and do the scripting and everything. But I'm like, in that story, Stan's still scripting a story, so.
Who the fuck's the Stan guy you're talking about?
He worked with Archie Comics and did Stan Lee and the Red. Did you read that one? I don't think it made it past 2 issues. That was the last comic I think he had come out.
No, wasn't it the Boom stuff?
No, this was after that.
Oh.
But then
he worked on some TV movies for a while.
But he also tried to get things out of the guys, like, oh, don't you young guys feel like doing some creator-owned work? You don't want to just be working at Marvel the whole time. And they're sort of like, well, yeah, but... And he's like, well, these guys won't tell you this, but this is what's really going on. So, yes, very entertaining.
God, it must have kind of sucked for those other guys. With you. Freaking Neil Adams shows up in my panel, and now I gotta...
Oh, but Azarar was so good, though. Holy, like I'm used to his like, sequential stuff, but being able to turn a sketch out in, like, 45 minutes and everything, I'm like, that's a skill. So I was definitely impressed. I would say he held his own.
Good, good. Well, that sounds like that was the highlight of the whole thing.
I think that's my best story. So anything else they tell you is just going to be like, well, I bought some stuff. And I did get A Shadow Man by Michael Walsh. So do the labels on the back of the books bug you? Because there was this place selling all these trades for, like, really cheap, like from $10 to $30 or anything, but they have a label on the back that says, you pay $5, special clearance books, and you can't get the label off the back.
Well, that ain't right. You can't get it off. They don't. It depends on the, like, I wouldn't buy, like, an artist edition with that, but, like, a regular book, I don't care.
Because I thought I could have had a lot of books with these labels on them, and I'm like, oh, that is, somehow I bought one of them, and another one just had a regular price tag, so then I bought that, but I was... Like, it was usually the manga that had the regular price tag, and the other ones had the special clearance. But they had some, like, out-of-print stuff there, and I'm like, I couldn't bring myself to buy the out-of-print stuff, but I...
Well, it's manga. Who cares? Yeah, buy that crap. It's all worthless anyways. What do you care? I can have stickers on every page blocking all the content, and you can still buy it.
I don't know. It's just... It's, I don't know.
No, but I'm with you.
I bought one thing.
Like I said, it also depends. Like, some designers, they do stuff on the back page. Others don't. Like, if there's artwork, I don't want to cut. But if it's just, like, blurbs or something, what the fuck do I care?
Yeah, it was just weird. But there was something that I had looked at for, like, a long time. It was, like, the Summit of the Gods. And it was, like, an Everest climb thing. And it wasn't by, like, a regular manga publisher. So I was just, like... Yeah, I'll pick this up because I think it's like $25, $30 and it was $5. So I'm like, well, even if there's a label, I'll definitely pick this up.
So would you say you do most of your shopping at cons, online, or at local stores?
It depends what it is.
Well, use your words. What's
going on like, here? Like monthly stuff and cheap stuff is like LCS stuff. Because sometimes you just feel like buying something too and it's like, you don't want a digital or whatever. Or I'm like, if you're going to get a digital with a print, I'm like, why wouldn't I get the print? Like, why do I want to miss out on one object in this situation? But for like more expensive trades or Omniboo, it's like all online pretty much. Unless you can, you know, hustle a deal at a convention. Because sometimes they have like unadvertised deals. Like you'll see something, you'll be buying something for $25 and something for $18, and if you realize that works out to $43, and they don't want to count out change, so they're like, just give me $40. So
thanks,
it's already like
math lesson.
Yeah, it's like already like 50% off or whatever, but it's like you can work the system and, you know, get a few more dollars off. So sometimes that works out to your advantage.
It seems like I mean, I'll buy stuff directly from creators, but I don't do a ton of shopping. Sometimes I'll either get it right from the publisher or the creator, but I rarely go to get that much from third-party sellers at conventions nowadays, so I didn't know if you were still... Because in the old days, you there'd always be two-for-one deals, and that's...
Well, there's always dollar bins, and there's always, like $40 omnibus or something that you can pick up, or, like... There was one place that were trying to get rid of a lot of older trades, and they're like, yeah, this whole shelf is 75% off. So I saw some cross-gen stuff there, and I'm like, I might as well. Why not?
So are those Canadian prices?
Some places are Canadian, but it's usually U.S. But the dollar is fluctuating right now, so like I didn't find the deals were as crazy as other years. Like a lot of places are just like U.S. cover. And I'm like, I can get that anywhere. And there's a guy across from you that's selling way cheap. So it's just like, I always wonder how those guys are back every year. Like someone must buy from them. Like it would be interesting to hear from one of those guys, like how well they do and everything. Because I don't know. I never buy from them unless you have something that's way out of print or something good. But I picked up two volumes of Negation and a volume of Crux from the CrossGen because it was 75% off. I'm like, might as well.
Hey, you can't pass up good deals that are they're practically paying you to take them off their hands.
Exactly. Crux
was the Bar Sears one?
No. This is like Epting and Pelletier. So that so it's like all guys I ended up at Marvel. And then it's Bedard and Wade Marvel, on writing.
Well, sounds like it was a fun time. And it's not like Phil wasn't without his adventures. I saw via the means of Twitter, and Phil is there at Me and My Sloth, and I'm there at LA underscore Rabbit One. And Kevin is WWX Kev, right?
I am.
And I noticed, saw Phil, you posted a photo.
Yes.
That got to, what was that photo of?
Well, because of my review last time of, what was it called? The Delinquents?
Yes.
Yes.
I decided, well, I guess, I don't know how to describe it, but when I want something, I really want it. So I kind of go all out. And so after that comic, I kind of jump-started my want for Valiant when I swore I wasn't going to get it because I was too far behind. So I ended up getting everything up to date.
Yeah, today you posted a pretty big picture of a stack of trades.
Yeah, and today I got the last ones I was missing that I ordered in. Because I went to Chapters and I went to a comic store and got every Valiant trade they had. And so so I started reading them. And
they're
so
terrible. And you're done.
we lied to you this whole time.
Well, you're not far off because the comics aren't terrible, but the people in the comics are terrible.
Yeah, pretty much.
This is not a world of heroes.
I remember at all. The first issue of Harbinger turning off people, and there's some pretty despicable actions going on in that issue.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So far, I've read Eternal Warrior Volume 1, which this is a pretty cool series because basically every arc is just a different timeline with him. The second one is him 3,000 years in the future. This one is, which I'm really looking forward to, this one is in the past. And he's a jerk face. He beats his daughter in this and all that. But basically it takes place in the past and pretty much shows him quitting because all this horrible stuff his daughter did and stuff. And then it brings us back to present time. And I thought that series was excellent. Did you guys read that series at all?
Yeah. I was wondering how your reaction would be.
Didn't we talk about the first issue, I think?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
No, that would have been too long ago.
Yeah, like I know other places.
Because I think we cut, because it was... Because it ends on that cliffhanger of the daughter showing up.
Are we that scene now?
That is correct. Yeah, it does do that.
Because he's living like this, like off in
Bushman.
In Africa on his own. And then the surprise twist is, bam, it's his daughter. And you're like, what? And that's when, because I thought that was a pretty good opening issue.
Yeah, but I wonder what the reaction is from the first arc to the second arc, because I don't know if certain things were promised or hinted at, and then you're like, what is going on? It's just very strange with the Eternal Emperor arc and then and the way the first arc ends. It's just like, I don't know, you expect more.
Well, it's going to be jumping around, I guess, all the time.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't have another story coming up, so.
Oh, no?
He does. Oh, he does? No, he's in The Valiant by Kent Lemire and Rivera. So. Okay. So I don't know if that's going to touch on anything.
I know he's in that comic Unity.
Yes, he's also in New Unity. That's right.
Yep. Which I haven't tried that one yet. The other ones I've tried is I read Exo Manowar 1-3, which I talked about on a previous one.
Yeah. Yeah, you said you weren't grooving on, or you thought you wouldn't be grooving on the later stuff, I think.
But I was wrong. I actually like him a lot, but he's another character that is just brutal. Because he comes from an older time, he's not really caught up to our time yet because he's just jumped into all these different situations. And so he just, like, he has no problem slaughtering people left and right.
Well, yeah.
He definitely has rage issues.
Yeah, well, in his time, it's like might is, like, he just used, you know, you would show your weapons, you would do your stuff, and then you would win, and you would crush everyone, and you know, that's how the world was.
Yeah. But yeah, I've really grown to this title. I'd like this title a lot now. I'm very excited to read the rest.
I love the Ninjak stuff in the second arc of EXO.
Yes, I like the Ninjak stuff more than I thought I was, because I think I was saying I wasn't looking forward to that. Yeah. And then the third trade, he ends up going back to the alien planet and getting some revenge there. I thought that was all dealt with very quickly.
Yeah, it was kind of tidy, wasn't it?
Yeah. But, just four issues, but that's all right. And then after that, it was Bloodshot, Volume 1 and 2. Which I read in the past, so that wasn't new, because I had those before.
Yeah.
So I haven't read this stuff afterwards, because I was waiting for that, and I got that today. And then I read, I got Harbinger 1, 2, and then I got, this is my mistake, I got Harbinger Wars, the deluxe edition.
Oh, yes.
It doesn't have issue 0 that's in the Harbinger trade, so I missed that out. I did pick up a single issue of, is it the Bleeding Monk? Is that the 0 issue?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Okay, so I got the single issue at least.
The single issue came out like way later, but it doesn't really relate to. It doesn't connect. Mm-hmm. It's not like it would spoil something really for you, I don't think.
Yeah, and this puts it in reading order, and I think it would have read better in their own trades. Because it just repeats too much, like issue after issue.
Yeah. Do you get the Bleeding Monk, though?
I didn't read the one shot yet.
Like, even with the one shot, like, I don't feel like I entirely get the guy. Like, even, like, getting sort of an origin, like, I always feel like there should be a bigger aha moment. You know what I mean?
Well, I only read, I never read after that yet, the Harbinger stuff. So yeah. I figured that would be coming up.
Yeah. I don't know. I'd just be interested what you think of that. Like, maybe, like, it seems to be fine for other people. But some stories, you're just, like, waiting for that thing to click in motion. And I feel like that's one character where I enjoy it, but it's like it doesn't fit completely in a slot.
Well, he's a legacy character, right? He was around in the original.
Oh, was he?
Universe as well, I thought.
Okay, I don't.
Because I was at a panel a long time ago, and someone was talking about it before the character came out, and some people in the crowd got excited, which made me think, I don't know this guy.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Like, I've never seen him in my travels for the original stuff, but it just seems weird.
Yeah,
somehow.
I've definitely never seen him, but I'm sure he is, because a lot of these characters I don't know at first. I read up later, and it's like, oh, okay, they were existing.
Yeah.
That's not from my knowledge. It's just from having read that or being at that panel whenever.
Oh, I bet it is for sure. Yeah.
Maybe they're not a major character in the original.
I read most of the original, but I don't remember. But it was so long ago.
Yeah, that's what I was doing at Fan Expo too, sort of like filling in holes for stuff. I'm like, yes, Psylord's number one and stuff like that. It's like, oh, some people are like, yeah, I would give you that for free, probably. You know.
So I haven't tried any Quantum or Woody yet, or Archer and Armstrong, the ones I'm most excited for, because I was waiting for the whole collection for those.
Yeah.
Because I did have the first few, but...
Yeah, the Archer and Armstrong, I'll be interested. I've been enjoying that.
Well, I think those will be my favorite, so I'm kind of... I don't want to waste them either. You know, like, that's... Mm. Like, I'm kind of like that with certain series, like Prophet I've been holding on to, because I don't want it to read it all and then have it done, you know?
Yeah, the Strike File came out today.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
I didn't even notice it. Damn.
Yeah, it was
I did want to pick that up.
Yeah, it was late.
Shoot. maybe it didn't show up at my store then, because I figure I would have noticed that.
Well, I kind of wonder how many people are reading that series, and then how many of them would want a Strike File.
Well, but I just wanted it because I don't know if it's going to be in trade or not.
It'll probably be.
Okay, I hope so.
Yeah.
I don't even know what it is really, but I just know
like
it was a Prophet one shot
type of thing.
What the fuck does that mean? It's a made up word.
It should be like a handbook.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so.
I hate that word.
Phil takes his allegiance to indie comic book noise seriously and ignores all other... They don't exist.
Well, no, it's because I'm an idiot.
...window of independent noise.
What, it's not on purpose.
What, to get Phil's interest, I have to say who's who?
Yeah, okay, I would have got that.
Phil, you're supposed to continue to... Oh, Hotmu is the official handbook of the Marvel Universe.
I never read those ones really that much. They were kind of lame compared to Who's Who.
Well, the thing is, back in the day, I used to read like handbooks and like indexes because you never thought you were ever going to get to read those stories. Like, it just seemed, it didn't seem fathomable in the future. Like, there would be essentials and there would be like streaming and your mind just couldn't comprehend. Yeah, that's true. Like, you'll ever buy those. So you're like, I might as well read a summary of something because I'm never going to read it.
Well, that's now, that, like, but it was the only way to find out a lot of times, some, particularly the more obscure characters. Yeah. And it would be nice to have like first appearances and things like that. Like, that's all cool information.
Yeah, that's why I buy reprints too. It, when it would even if it was like boxed off on some kind of crazy thing, like, oh, this is a masterpiece edition or something, I'd be like, I don't care. Or this is a, you know, whatever excuse they had to reprint something, I'm like, I was there.
Well,
so you I guess the Rye trade isn't out yet.
No, that comes out soon.
Yeah, because the fourth issue just came out. What other title?
Well, there's one title that hasn't been collected yet. That's the Death-Defying Dr. Mirage.
Oh, is that supposed to be a segue? I was going to mention Shadow Man.
That was my attempt to...
Well, I haven't read any Shadow Man.
...around to our thing, Kevin. You're not making my seamless attempts to orchestrate this.
That's because you're like Steve. You're like, you got to keep this train going. Don't go off on all this stuff for half an hour. And I'm like, geez.
I am like the poor man, Steve.
Like, you didn't want me to list, like, every Valiant issue I got at Fan Expo or anything. You're like, I gotta keep this train going. And I'm like, okay, okay, Andrew, jeez.
Yeah, but now we've explained all that, so the magic is ruined. The listener now seen behind our feeble attempts to manipulate them into thinking that we organically were going to shift to discussing...
Oh, shifting to the problem with the call. Awesome.
That one.
Oh, good.
Wow, the call just cut out.
What do you mean?
I mean, it said, like, I wasn't connected.
Oh, no.
It's recording again, though.
Oh. So okay. Good.
All right, let's start. So you said you were interested in the Death-Defying Dr. Mirage, Phil?
Yes, I didn't read the first issue, but I used to like the old stuff because I liked, what's his name? Something Dark, Master Dark or something like that?
Yes.
Who I believe was in his stuff.
I think so. Well, wasn't it a weird concept? Like, as far as I know, like, there was, I guess it was the wife that was tangible and, like, the...
Yeah.
I guess the husband was, like, a ghost or something and there was something funky or weird going on. I don't really...
I think I was too young to fully appreciate what was going on exactly. Yeah.
Cause that sounds like an awesome concept for like if they team up or something like that.
I forget who the artist was on the old stuff too, but
I got one of those issues. I did buy some.
Oh, you did?
Oh. I did buy some amongst all my other loot. Where is it here? Oh, of course they don't have the artist on the cover. But yeah, I picked up 6, 9, and 10. Let me see if I can... Piero, did you hear that? The opening of...
Yeah, I don't hear that very often anymore.
Oh, Bernard Chang was a penciler. For this issue, at least. And it was Bob Layton was the writer.
Okay.
So that's kind of interesting. I don't know, I love that concept. That's what it usually is. Like, if the title's like not like super entertaining, like if it's just good, not great, I'm like, at least a concept, I'm like, wow, that's a great concept. Because I can't think of a whole lot of books like that. Like, I'm sure there's like movies and
Lady Hawk.
A lot of stuff, but not for comics.
Lady Hawk the movie?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same kind of thing about their conditions, except force. I mean, it's not the exact same thing.
Did it have the rock and roll music? In the medieval times.
I see that. But the new is by Jen Van Meter, Roberto Della Torre, and David Barron on colors. And I gotta say, Jen Van Meter is a great name for some reason. I really like it.
It is. Yeah, it's catchy.
Wonder
if
that's like the real, like that would be a perfect pen name. Jen Van Meter. But
you might have just spoiled the surprise by saying that.
Oh, well, regardless, that's the credited title, and that's how we're going to give credit as credit is due. And much like the original, we start with a close-up on what appears to be an iPhone. And it's Dr. Mirage, and what Dr. Mirage does is help people out by hooking them up with communications from the spirit world.
That's something you want to be... Like, I don't know if you want to be going through everyone's trauma and feelings and being possessed and everything like that every day, too. So that's kind of part of the hook.
Yeah, feelings suck.
It seems to take a... Well, what's interesting is she makes it clear that she's not doing this for money or anything like that, and she's just trying to help these people. And they do portray, like, the ghosts of these people around them to communicate that she's probably not a fraud.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just going to assume that from what we see in this issue that she actually has some abilities that way. Although I think it would be a perfectly great premise if it turned out she really was a con artist and it was some long con she was pulling. But I think right away they establish with those ghosts that she does it. And like a lot of books, like, you know, her agent's like, one more job, so to speak, you know. And she's like, oh, I'm not in the mood for it. Well, one, you know, you need this, you need the money type of thing. And it's an effective but well-used trope. I'm not going to knock it too much, but it's not something we haven't seen before. So she has to go to the Mark's house and, you know, get to the bottom of his investigation. He spins a story that he was part of a World War II spook squad that was trying to beat the Russians to figure out what the Nazis were up to. And that somehow he bumbled into this incident where he is now psychically chained to this, they call it a thranial binding. Not a term I'm from. This may be something in paranormal literature. I'm not really up on all that stuff. Kevin, Phil, you guys into the conspiracies and all that?
Not really. Like, I there's some degree that it's interesting, but it's like you got to filter like the signal to noise thing.
Right. So, well, I just didn't know if the thranial binding was like, you know, like, obviously I've heard of like Ouija boards and stuff like that, but I didn't know if this was supposed to be like the, something the writer invented or something from like this kind of psychic. Because it's well known, like from Hellboy to other fiction, that the Nazis, they always were, you know, working on the supernatural.
Yeah. Yeah, well, even if it is just made up, it's like, it's not really a... I always think of back to when comics used to make up science. And it's like, if you're making up magic or supernatural stuff, and it's like a comic and everything, I'm like, it totally fits in here. Like, if it isn't a thing, I'm like, I don't really care.
Good. That's what I like to hear. Your lack of caring. And so, basically, she finds out that there's some sort of weird creature that he's bound to. But she says, okay, I got to work on this. But it turns out she confesses to her agent who set this deal up that, like, look, this guy's pulling my leg. It's a, you know, he's running some kind of con, and I'm going to get to the bottom of it. I got to be careful around this dude. And she leaves him in charge of the house, but she has her own wards and everything protecting her place. And she has all these possessions, and she's going to end up going after this dude. And part of her motivation is, even though she can communicate with the dead, she can't find her husband, and who's passed on. And that's why she thinks this might lead her to that goal. But it's set up pretty well. I liked it. I felt there was a lot of setup in this, though. It was a lot of like, okay, we establish who she is. She's missing her dad. This is a bit of a flim-flam. I don't really mind the dialogue heavy, but I don't know. Sometimes they can end these with interesting twists or whatever. Not that you need to do that, but I just felt I don't know, it needed some kind of punch up at the end. But yeah. It's very clear storytelling. The art, the style is kind of, I'm going to say, a little bit of that kind of scratchy. And the color is a lot of the colors are very just like tones. So instead of going in and coloring everything specifically, it's scratchy style with these different tones that predominate. And so she'll be in like a cool kind of light blue and white motif in some scenes. And then the guy she visits is all kind of tan. And it kind of gives it sort of a dreamlike quality, I thought, between the artist and the colors. Kevin, like, what are your conclusions?
Yeah, even though they didn't go into like a big, like awesome cliffhanger thing, it's a meaty first issue. So like that's enough for me. It's like I didn't need that. Oh, like I was fascinated by like the stuff that was in here. Like I hope they go into more like the historical stuff. Like when you give it a, it seems like, there's extra things going on. If you didn't have that, have parts like that, I would be like, oh, well, like, why is she doing this? Or what's the story behind that? But you get some backstory and stuff. And I also like the, like, they didn't beat you over the head with all this magic stuff. But then they did go into the wards and like her costume. Like, why would you wear that around every day? Or, you know, what's up with your house? Or, but there's wards all over. So there's a reason for things. So I like that they kind of explain away some things like that. If you were wondering or thought things were going to, I don't know, get a little goofy. Like
it's kind of neat Valiant's range, though, at least on their comics, too. Eh? Like it seems very different to a lot of these.
Well, they did a good job with the world building. I'll say that. Like they've constructed. And like Kevin said, you know, they give them the. They've built this thing. They explain the history and why she's doing everything and all that. I think it's going to read great in a trade setup. I think you got the right key to this film.
Well,
it's to read like four.
Yeah, I find in trade I'm really enjoying it definitely, because at first when I read it just a few issues at a time when I tried Bloodshot and Exo originally, yeah, I just wasn't digging it that way, but reading it one after the other, I'm definitely getting into it big time now that I see the world in a bigger picture now and I understand more what's going on. A lot of crossovers.
Do you think this Japanese symbol on the wall in this house means anything?
Is it like the Bloodshot type symbol?
No. I just wonder, when you see a foreign language, you're like, well, is that there on purpose? Is that supposed to, you know, like hinting at future stories or what they've been involved with?
Could be, yeah. I only read the first few issues of that series, so I'm not sure.
I think some of it was trying to get the feeling also that they work all around the world. I think they really wanted to have this be like a Doctor Strange, Doc Savage, like someone who investigates anywhere and everything.
Yeah.
And to make it clear that this is like international, it's not just going to be tied to the U.S., even though this story involves a guy that worked for the U.S. government. Like, this covers the whole world. He's been to Africa. She's been all around. And I think that helps to sort of build the scope. And maybe also make it, like, more important. Like, if this is getting her attention, then this is a bigger, bigger deal than something before, because the world's at stake, so to speak.
Yeah, and something went down in Shadow Man, so this is sort of like the supernatural corner right now.
This would be, yeah, the title to finally cross over with Shadow Man, because he hasn't really been in any of the other titles, eh?
Yeah, he's sort of kept to himself. Like, Archer and Armstrong felt like that too, but they sort of had their...
Well, they have Quantum and Woody now, though.
Yeah, and they also had the little thing with the hardcore, and they would have like one panel reference or something. So, Shadow Man seemed more like removed, and this seems more in that corner, but not exactly the same thing.
That's one of the books I'm most excited to read is the Archer and Armstrong Bloodshot crossover. I'm very excited for that one. I imagine it's going to be funny.
So I assume that everyone has the regular edition. They don't have the plus edition that had all the extra content.
I've flipped.
There were two editions?
I've seen it, yeah. They did an extra one that had to do with the extra content. But I thought that was... I mean, I can understand why you do it, and it's a lot of extra stuff. Mm-hmm. But it seemed like... I don't know. It's a lot of... if you like handbooks and type of... To go back to our subject.
It was an extra buck, I guess?
I don't know. Probably? I'm not sure.
I don't know the pricing.
I
I'm
I saw the
sadly ignorant on these. Unless it's something, I did look at the price of something today, but I'm normally
big LA man, just going around buying whatever he wants.
Buying a comic book here and a comic
book. Stick that in my limo.
Yeah, in Canada, it's like, oh, you got to pre-order that in advance. If
we
got to
trade,
no,
we got to trade first.
Isn't this coming from the guy who, because he liked a comic, bought 37 trades?
Hey, I have problems. Okay, I'm not saying I don't have problems. I definitely have that problem. That's what I did with Fables. I bought 11 trades, I think, at once.
Yeah.
Right, but that's at least relatively the same creative.
But I never even tried it. Like, I knew nothing about it. Like, usually, if I see a series that I want to buy, if there's a whole bunch of other volumes, I have to get them all. Like, even if I don't know if I like it. Like, I did the same thing with the Big Dog Ink stuff, you know? Mm.
So this is like me with Starman Omnibus. I've read the first one, and I finally bought the sixth one.
Oh, you got to get the rest,
and I'm
yeah.
And I'm like, I have five to read, and I only read the first one. I'm like, well, might as well buy the next five Omnibus.
I like Triple Dip, that comic. I haven't done that often.
But the Rye extras, from what I know, like, they had that huge map that Matt Kint had posted online. So I was just like, wow, that was an awesome extra. So I assume the extras for the Dr. Mirage were probably pretty interesting, too.
It's pretty – what I like is they start with one of those retro comics that are so popular. Like, the first couple of pages are like an old-timey retro comic.
Mm.
Yeah. Which I love that stuff. And then it gets more into kind of the – the what they call the Lyceum Codex, which has, you know, like, different, that's the hot move, but they try and make it look like this is notes that the person would have, type of thing.
Yeah.
As opposed to just being something directly interfacing, kind of breaking the fourth wall. They keep the fourth wall here and have it be her notes, or actually March's notes, probably. He's the protagonist in that open throwback story. So it was interesting. I mean, I don't mean to short shrift. Like I said, I do enjoy the throwback-y stuff, but...
Yeah, like, I haven't read a lot of stuff by her, but I know she's definitely a talent, and once she was announced, I was happy. So, yeah, it lived up to my expectations and everything.
Well, I've liked it so far. I mean, even if it's not to my style, Valiant hasn't put out anything that I would consider... not quality, it just may not resonate with me.
Yeah.
About every publisher, where sometimes...
Everything sat well with me so far, and the ones I haven't read are the ones I'm looking forward to the most, so I should be okay.
Yeah. But I mean, even if it's not to your style, I think you'll find that it's a quality product. It just isn't something that's jiving with you today.
Yeah. And so far, Kevin was right, too. Like, you don't need to read them all to get, like, into the universe. Like, you can just pick one or two. Like, if you read Hardbringer, then you have to read Bloodshots, though. Like, yeah, things like that. But there seems to be, like, in groups almost, so.
Yeah.
Like we were talking about, so it's not bad.
It's kind of like Spider-Man swinging by in the background or whatever. Like, a little more than that, but you sort of see the connections, but so if you know, then you kind of go, oh, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. And then I guess Unity is their, like, Avengers team almost.
Yeah, or I heard someone say
or X-Force,
like,
probably
League.
More of an X-Force.
You don't want to go Justice League?
No, because they're kind of bastards on this team.
Okay, Authority.
The only good character in this universe is Zypher, Faith, or whatever.
Yeah. Well,
yeah,
yeah,
she's like the only hero.
Yeah, she's like the real superhero, like the...
Yeah, and, and I imagine Archer is also a hero. Isn't he? Because I thought he was all noble and stuff. Or is
sort,
he just
but he can be a little insufferable as well.
Oh, yeah, okay, I think he was too.
Yeah, because the whole deal with his parents and his upbringing, he's a little...
Okay, so it's just the girl that can fly and stuff then.
Yeah, pretty much, she's like the heart of everything.
Yeah.
But as Kevin intimated, I also had some adventures, and I had a kooky theme I was going to discuss. I've got two books that represent sort of all of North America, because I found myself up in Juneau, Alaska.
Strangely you were above enough. Us.
And I always, when I travel, I stick my head in the comic shops.
When he travels, he likes to go to the most horrible places in the world.
Apparently.
First, he's just a prison, like, island.
What's farther away than I don't want to go to Fan Expo. I don't want to go to like Canada, Vancouver or anything. So he's just like, what's further? Oh, right.
Seriously, come see us in Toronto.
You know, I did actually, we did stop over in Vancouver for like half a minute. So I did.
That's right. I remember you tweeted that.
Yeah.
For so a short period of time.
So if I would have flown over there, I could have met you for like half a second.
It would have been slightly longer than that, but not by much. It was pretty quick. Just enough time to
can't you use some of your LA money and just use your private jet?
Yeah, all that LA money, all my private jet money is tied up in comic books right now. They're not very liquid, despite what you would believe. It's really
It's funny though. I was at the comic store today and there was a guy buying all the backboards and the different covers and everything. Like, he was brainwashed into that. It's still a collectible item that's going to make you money.
Well, it's all those artist editions he needs to unload so he can, you know, fuel his jet.
Are you kidding? When things get bad, I'm going to build a house out of those things. That's why I keep them cardboard boxes that come in. That'll be the roof. And then the
God, without Steve, we have no direction at all.
It's awesome, isn't it?
It's, I don't know what it is. Like, we just go off and off.
That's so I found a remembering thing, and it's like, there's no one there. Like, Andrew's tried at the beginning, and it sort of worked, but now it's like, we're just back to our old selves.
But, well, and I'll force this boat, damn it, with everything I got. So anyways, I try and find my better half found this cool comic book store, so I pop in, and I always ask for local books. And I don't know if they're really local or not, but I figure it's a good chance for the store owner to unload some garbage he's been took on as a favor to a friend. What they have. So I picked up the artist's name is Dawson Walker, and he has a Tumblr, Dawson Walker Tumblr, and he just had a story in one of the Vertigo, like Magenta or one of them ones, one of them colored books that they're doing. He did one of the stories, but I picked up Phantosmia, which is a phantom smell, as he explains on the back. And he has a kind of very loose, and it's black and white, like lots and lots of lines. Mm-hmm. And the character goes by the moniker Neil the Nose. And basically, he has a heightened sense of smell. And so the artist chooses all the smell is like all these little black lines that come off of it.
So it's chew with the nose.
Yeah. In a way. And so his dad leaves him there. And he, I don't know how much you can say with this without kind of spoiling. It's,
well, let me ask you this. Can we get it? If we can't get it easily, you might as well
spoil it. You can go to his Tumblr. I think it might be on there somewhere. I mean, it's not like a huge, I mean, it's if a regular
size. You want to get people interested to get it, though. It's you want to get a little bit of juice.
Didn't they see that he was at TCAF or something like that?
Yeah, that's why I don't know if he really is from Alaska or ever was up there or something. Yeah. But I'm like, why else would this guy be chilling it as an Alaskan comic? Unless he just saw me as a sucker and decided to unload it.
Well, there is a band called Of Montreal because they wanted that Montreal cred for their music.
Did that get them anything?
I don't know. It just seemed weird.
Yeah, I can't figure out you crazy Canadians. So anyways, and the other thing about going to the Tumblr, though, is you get to the sense for his art style. And that'll tell you, like I said, lots and lots of lines.
What is this Tumblr? You and all your media things you guys do. Like,
yeah, no, I have a Tumblr, too. I post artwork on it. And Steve has a Tumblr.
You know, it's like Flickr, where the E is missing?
Flickr. Here's another one. It's that Flickr.
Old.
Yeah, but Tumblr's cool.
Yeah, this is true.
Is it? I've never seen it in my life.
No, for all the Young Avengers fans and all like the hip stuff's going on Tumblr.
Because what happens is me and other people a lot of times also post a lot of artwork. Not stuff I draw. Well, some people do like this guy. But a lot of it's just pages of original art and sketches and stuff like that. So it's just if you want to lose hours just staring at ridiculous, you know, original art pages and things like that, it is the place to be. I totally recommend it. And it's nice, I would imagine it's nice for artists because, like, this guy, you can really showcase what you're doing.
Isn't that what that other site is for, though?
DeviantArt?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's DeviantArt not...
is limited to posting. Yeah. Tumblr, it's just
You can add text.
And well, they have an infinite scroll on Tumblr, so it never stops. You just keep on going and going and going, yeah. And you can ask questions.
But then your stuff will get lost.
Yeah, but you never.
It's like it's like his own channel. Every person's Tumblr. Like I have a Tumblr for LA Rabbit, and this guy has his own, and so it's whatever I post on it. And it's really easy to repost people's stuff. So there's a lot of sharing that goes on as far as, like I said, when it's cool art and images. Most of a lot of the podcasts I listen to, they post their images on a Tumblr, you know, when they talk about something.
Yeah, well, Andrew, how many times do you see a piece of artwork get like 2,000 retweets? I don't see that often, but you go on Tumblr and people are like sharing it like thousands of times over. It's just insane.
Andrew, I thought you were going to keep control of the show.
No, I've lost it. But anyway, so he finds this smell, and the smell just gets more intense, and the lines sort of take him over and end up going inside of him. And it's just really you know, these sort of indie, like you can't explain it without kind of, it's the experience of taking the trip with, if you like the artwork and you like seeing sort of these smells as they get personified into lines and as they take over the guy.
When you say lines, is it like the Fireside Chat comic? Like, I believe one of them, the artwork was like that, wasn't it?
I don't know that comic. It's a lot. I mean,
it was the one our Australian friend did.
Oh, that one. Yeah. This one, jeez. I would say, is generally, I mean, the smells are long, dark, like of varying widths, but they're kind of squiggly. But the artwork in the background has a lot of, instead of shading, it's just a lot of little lines. Not even hash work sometimes. Sometimes it's hash work, but usually it's just these little lines. It's pretty interesting. Like, I like how it looks on the page. Mm-hmm. But you can tell this guy, I think, is at the beginning of his career, if I had to take a guess. Which is not a knock. I just don't think there's a ton of stuff. There's a chance.
Well, he's from Alaska. What is he using to even draw? I can't get a lot of supplies out there.
Well, I don't even know. Like I said, I may have been hustled. This may be some non-Alaskan Canadian sense.
That might just be his like way to lure people in.
Well, yeah, he goes across the border from Canada into Alaska to sell you some goods.
We've got this sweet Alaskan content, and then the next guy is like, "Oh, this is all Canadian. Oh, yeah, no doubt about it.
It's so Canadian." He's in the Northwest Territories, and he's like, "Man, this territory isn't big enough. I got to sell some of the stuff as authentic Alaskan stuff too."
So, and then on the other end of the scope, I decided to order a English language Mexican comic. Now, I don't know
if I've ever seen a Mexican comic, actually.
I don't know if I may have written about these guys or talked about them, but Boudica Comics from a couple years ago, the Dream House, maybe I just wrote a review instead of talking about it. But I was like, oh, I like their stuff. So I went to their website and saw they had a new collection called Daymares. It's a horror anthology. And it's digest size. I mean, it's a little bit wider, but it's that kind of shorter one. So I ordered that, and then I sort of forgot. And the mailman dropped this notice of like, you have a package from Mexico you have to sign for. What? Mexico? What the heck?
There's a human head in it.
And then like 2 hours later, I'm like, oh, wait, that's that comic book guy. So, Daymares. Yeah, if you remember, it's like this two-person company, I think. I mean, that's the only two of Eva Cabrera and Claudia Aguirre. So they're in Monterrey and Guadalajara. Ooh, they're on Twitter, too. How about that? So anyways, I got the House of Dreams, and I really like that. This one is a horror. There are a few little text pieces in it too. This one seems a bit more leaning on, not fully on manga, but manga influenced, I would say, in the artwork.
Now, I think that's more like common. Would someone like me like this type of horror?
I think I'd be curious. Maybe I should send you a copy.
Like, is this all like Mexican lore this horror is based on and stuff?
I don't know. It's like there's this creepy like raven lady that comes and the kid pulls his eyes out and gives them to her. Okay. And it's just, and I'm like, I don't know if this is some like, it's just creepy. But I don't know enough about, like, there is one about like these looks like conquistadors kind of back in time that are in, and they run into some trouble with the natives, as you might imagine.
Yeah.
So there is some of that, but I don't know how much of it is based on Mexican stuff, because I'm an ignorant American who doesn't know anything about other cultures or even my own.
Well, I saw Arrested Development, the new season. You guys just want to build a big wall.
But
that's how I get my politics.
Wouldn't they just be doing us a favor, because we'd be keeping the crazies out rather than, you know, us going into their country? Isn't that how the wall system works? When you build one up,
Mexican people aren't crazy, Kevin.
Oh, I'm not talking about Mexico. We're not bordering Mexico.
Oh, the Americans, yeah.
Yes. Because, you know, they're always like wall either on the Mexican side or the Canadian side. And we're like,
over to our side.
But you help to keep all those, you got all those animals with rabies up there that come down and
infect our... you guys smuggle children.
But you know what happens all the time, though, on our border? It's like, hey, we want to build this bridge. And Canada's like, oh, we got the money. And the States is like, yeah, sorry, we just don't have the funding for that infrastructure. You're going to have to build the rest of the bridge yourself, Canada. And we're like, well, thanks.
Yeah, and you do it because you're suckers. But anyway,
no, it's because somebody has to.
I really like the story with the indigenous people is nice, because it's got a lot of tone in the artwork, and you guys know how much I love tone. So the...
You said it was a two-man company, so how many artists is on this book?
I don't... The thing that I was less impressed with is they make it very clear about the color. So I think it looks like there is about four people involved, but there's, you know, they're not always clear about... Like the cover they lay out, I think that they mentioned tone in one.
Is one of the big thing about anthologies for me is the fact that they all look so different, you know, and feel so different.
Oh, no. This, I would say, there's less of a change of style.
Okay.
It feels like it's this, like, I think their company, based on my recollection of the other book, like, there is some, it's not as wildly divergent as, like, an anthology from a bigger company.
Yeah.
Where it's, like, one style and a completely different one.
Do you feel that hurts it?
I think for this, it works. I think for a small company, my advice would be to keep with more of one identity. Because otherwise, I mean, there's something like Greyhaven, and they do those anthologies which are all over the map. And that can work, but if you only have a few books out, maybe you want to keep it so that people know this is the type of thing you're going to get. You know what I mean? You want more of a consistent feel, which I think this book has.
If the artwork's the same, like I said, it's good to like maybe make it one world or whatever, cross them over or whatever.
Well, even though that they're separate kind of worlds, at least the feel is very similar, and the style keeps it the same, which I think is a smart move, because, as you say, one of the things about anthologies, though, is also when you have them wildly divergent, it's rare that all of them are going to hit, you know what I mean? Or this one, because it's much more similar. I think you're a lot more likely to either all hit or all fail. But for me, I liked it. This company, they don't seem to put out a ton of books. Like, I only saw the two. But if I see they have another one coming out, I'll order it.
Yeah, well, I want to try it out, because I'm always up to try a new anthology, especially a horror one.
So it's just, so anyways, we've covered from Mexico to Alaska. So I feel that's a pretty wide berth of comics.
Yep, definitely.
So are we going to do the like different directions next time? Like we're gonna go left to right or something across the world?
Well, I have a quick horror anthology too. I could
speak sure.
Actually, Clive Barker's Hellraiser, Bestiary, or that word. It's a 6-issue miniseries by Boom. The Hellraiser comics before this by Clive Barker are amazing, and they take place after the second movie. So that's all been wrapped up now with the second volume just wrapped up. So now, they put out this... Oh, what, go on?
Just a question. Now, they also had Hellraiser ones that he didn't do about other times, right? Like the history of the guy from World War One and all that? Or did he do those?
Well, they were all based on his notes.
Okay. Because I know there was one that was like the... Like I said, the history of the guy from World War One, and I didn't know if you were talking about that.
Like, there's the odd miniseries and stuff that he didn't do so much, but the main series he did, it was all based on his notes. Like, it's the way he would have done Hellraiser. And this one he has no part of. So this one he doesn't give any story ideas or anything. But I notice in a lot of Hellraiser stories, Mark Miller's name is mentioned. Is there two Mark Millers, or is this the Mark Miller I'm thinking of?
I only know the one.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, because he seems to write a lot of Hellraiser, so I guess he's a big fan. Which is cool.
It's spelled the same and everything's the same?
M-I-L-L-E-R?
No.
A-R.
No?
A-R is the big
one. Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is a different guy.
This is a different guy. That's too bad. So this one has three stories in it. And I'm a big Hellraiser fan. Like, I just eat it up. But that's one series I watch over and over and over, even the bad ones. The comics are amazing. The old comics are amazing. And so the first story in this one basically kind of finishes off where the other series ended. Well, not really finishes off, but it takes place afterwards. It's basically, he doesn't have a name, but Pinhead. He's supposedly getting a name, actually, in a new book coming out by Clive Barker.
Yeah, maybe that's what it was. It was coming out because it was about Pinhead, because he's from World War One, I think, isn't it?
Yes, and his,
his
other character, I can't remember his name right now, but the guy in... that other movie he did with the magician, you know, Lord of Illusions, that detective guy there or whatever. That's a character in a lot of his stories. He's in that book too.
Like, yeah. Cause I remember at some convention, they were talking about how
Henry DeMore
or one guy, that guy, he was going to get like an origin story or maybe just something from his past or
that's a novel though. Yeah. That's going to be his next novel. And the first story is basically Pinhead being a big wussy and kind of crying about because he was turned human for a while and stuff. So he's just brought all these souls to just rip apart until he feels better. Really a very pointless little story. The next story is...
he's gone downhill ever since that martial law crossover. Anyway, it's cool.
The stuff before this is fantastic. But then the second story is just some people opening a box. And there's a skeleton dragon creature or whatever from the movies that comes out. And it turns out there's this group of like bad guys or mobsters that kind of look out and stop this thing, kind of like the good guy group version that they have too. And but basically, they just give the box back to the bum that's known to hand it out to people. Not really a great story either, so I wasn't too impressed so far. But then the third one was really cool. It's an actual, to be continued, it's only a part one story. But basically, it's about these mercenaries that trick Pinhead by calling him and trapping him. Like, they have everything done right just to trap him. And they shoot him with, like, these bullets with these markings on and everything and tie him up. And basically, they're getting paid to pull out all of his pins. They'll get like $100,000 for each pin or whatever. So they're about to pull each pin out of his head, and then it's to be continued. I enjoyed that one a lot because I know he's going to do horrible, horrible things to the next issue, I imagine, or the issue after that, depending how far it goes. But I'm definitely in till the end because I'm going to buy the trade too because I have all the Hellraiser stuff in trade. I'm a big anything Hellraiser that comes out, I'll collect.
So how's the artwork on it?
The artwork is, let's see if it's anyone I recognize. There's the first story is by Connor Nolan. Second story is Connor Nolan. The second story is Colin Loremire. And then it's Carlos Magno. So no one I really know, but for Hellraiser, it all worked for art-wise. Hellraiser is an easy one where you can get away with scratchy art or bad art too. Like, sometimes it really works for the Hell worlds and stuff. It's true though. Like, if you look like at the old epic ones and stuff.
Scratchy or bad.
Some of the art, a lot of people might not like, but it works so well with the story, I find. Like,
I can't tell what's going on in this artwork, but... you know, that kind of fits with the kind of thing he's
sometimes
going
just because it's so fucked up. But yeah, but I found, yeah, I had no complaints with the art at all. It was more just the two first stories were just, they just didn't hit for me, especially the first one. But I'm very excited for the rest because I know there'll be a lot of good ones. And like you say, anthologies, there's hits and misses, right? So
yeah, it's especially when they're really varying. I don't think you can. It'd be tough to find one where they're all going to hit with you, or but likewise, it's tough to find one where they're all going to miss.
Mm-hmm.
And there's got to be a mix in there of things you like. Got anything else for us, Kevin?
Should I give a quick shout out to some stuff? I don't know.
Sure.
Like the fade out came out. I don't know how many weeks ago it was now.
Oh yes, but I got the oversized of that.
You have to one up me. How awesome is the oversized one?
Really awesome. I love it. But the only thing is, though, I loved reading it like that too. The only thing is, though, these guys have to try something different. Like, enough with this shit. Yeah, we get it. You're good at these comics, but do something fucking different, please.
So you want them to stop making great comics that they know how to make?
No, I know they can do great comics doing other stuff. Just try a different time period, a different genre, anything, you know. Like, I love that other comic they did of what's that superhero one they did for Wildstorm?
That they did. You mean the sleeper thing?
The sleeper, yeah, that was awesome. That
well,
one.
You don't think like, Fatale was different because they had the whole.
I haven't
horror.
Read Fatale yet. I've been holding on because I'm waiting for it to finish. Because you know me, I'm crazy.
This could have been a criminal story. I agree there, but.
Yeah, like I read so many of those. I want them to see them do something different. That's all. I don't care what.
As long as they're producing like high quality material, it's not like I'm like, hey, try to do an Uncanny X-Men when you can't or something. You know what
like,
I mean?
Like, I'm not saying this is quality for sure, and it's a good story. I liked it, but I'm just kind of bored of it.
Hey, nothing wrong with branching out with Phil. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you got to try something different.
Yeah. Do you know if they're going to do oversized for every issue?
I don't think so. I think that was just a one-time cool
bad.
Thing.
It's
probably expensive to do at that size anyways.
So I won't be getting any more then. but I will be getting the trade maybe, though. But it's just because what's the use of having one oversized issue and then the rest small? You know, it's kind of dumb.
Remember, creators, don't do great work. That's the same thing. Phil won't buy your stuff.
Well, I like these oversized issues. Eric Larson put out a bunch for Image at one point. Like one shots.
Yeah, wasn't there something that came out in San Diego? It was like giant sized Bible Tales or something like
didn't
that.
Didn't see that one.
Andrew should know about this.
But you guys, I would
giant
have thought
sized
you guys
Bible
would be,
Tales.
Yeah, there was some kind of
my alley.
I would have thought you guys like would be huge voice. Fans of the oversized art.
Yeah, it's just I'm adding the title to my pull list, and I'm like. Do I want to go the extra step and like?
Well, this one would have been good to buy like both covers, just because this one would look good in a frame, like kind of thing.
Yeah,
because like, it looks like an old magazine.
But I also heard like there's like big white margins. It's not like they drew the art bigger or something to fit the magazine.
Oh. It's definitely a little. Oh, maybe
like there must be more
bastards.
White
it is. It's just a white border. It's the same size. You. It's not oversized at all.
What it is oversized, though.
Well, the paper is. That's about it.
I thought there's jerks. Something
I'm
going on
ripping
in the
it
back,
up.
Though.
It's garbage.
There's more to it, though, in the back. Like from
I don't
here.
Read that. I don't read that boring text shit.
Oh.
I'm here to look at comics, man. I want fucking a picture book. I'm not here to read a novel. If I want to go read a book, I'll go read a book.
So you're not a fan of Alan Moore's League stuff when he goes off and writes you?
I haven't tried the League stuff yet.
Well, a warning on the lighter stuff. He gives you extra content with, you know, like book material.
Yeah, a lot of text. When they have text in comics, a lot of times I'll skip over it. But there's once in a while where I have enjoyed it, like the Fables original graphic novel, the 1001 Nights or whatever.
Yeah.
That one I enjoyed the text.
Well, Moore's been doing that ever since Watchmen. He had all those text pieces and stuff.
Yeah, but this isn't like the text in. I don't want people to get confused. Like the text in Brubaker stuff isn't like related to the comic content.
No,
it's not like
that's
continuation
why I skipped,
of the story.
Yeah.
It's like movie
it's
reviews or whatever.
It's good, but it's just not my thing.
Yeah, like I can see it not being your thing and everything.
It's very well done garbage, but it's just not my thing.
Very well done garbage quotes.
It's just garbage to me, that's all.
One man's trash is another man's treasure.
Nope. Oh, jeez.
Well, then I'll give one super quick shout out.
This will never end. I got more.
And my list of recommendations to 2013's top shelf book, March, book one, Congressman John Lewis's story. It's John Lewis, Andrew Aden, and Nate Powell.
A political book? Really?
A horrible person if I don't feel like reading like comics that seem like I'm like they seem to be great things, but it seems like something you would take in school. And sometimes I'm like,
this was given to me as a gift. And yeah. I'm telling you, when I start, I was like, okay, I'll read it. I read it through in one sitting. I found it very, very compelling.
Yeah.
And I understand because I was also like, I'm familiar. I've seen documentaries on the sub, but they tell it in a personal way about his upbringing. And it's just
what's his story? What makes him interesting?
Oh, he's just grew up in a really super rural area,
mm-hmm.
and so it was the influence grew up on a really tiny little farm out in the middle of nowhere, and it was the influence of having a relative that brought him up, his uncle. Brings him to the city once as a little kid, and that sort of inspires him to more than just the farm out there. And as a kid that grew up in a rural environment, can appreciate sort of the God, there's more to life than just milking cows and getting eggs from chickens type of thing.
Yeah.
And I just found it super because I thought it was just going to be particular to his civil rights struggle, but it actually gets into his whole life.
Yeah, that's definitely more interesting. But yeah, if it's just the political stuff, that would be super boring. But if it goes into his real life stuff, that definitely makes it.
Yeah, I mean, just if you, like I said, if you're in a store and you see it, just start reading it. You might, when I started it, mm-hmm. I ended up reading it all in one session.
Top shelf, you don't see in a lot of stores, though. Usually you got to look and order it most of the time. Like they don't stay well stocked. Usually they'll have one copy of something, and if it sells, it's gone forever.
Well, this one got a lot of, maybe it's because it's down here. I was going to say, it got a lot of press and ink. Mm-hmm. He's a pretty relatively famous guy. So it made more waves. And normally, I'm not that much into autobiographical comics.
Yep.
But then again, most people have pretty unremarkable. Like, this guy is something that's really lived a pretty fucking intense life. Like, if it was an autobiographical, most of these cartoonists haven't had that interesting a life. So that's why I'm like, I don't really care about how you got dumped once and how your parents don't love you or, Like, this guy actually seen some shit. Like, he's been in it. Like,
That did sound right.
That's like some real world stuff, not just, no one respects me as an artist type of.
You're just full of edumacation tonight.
I think he just described why, like, slice of life stuff sometimes doesn't always work. Because it's like, what did I have for lunch today? And I'm like, I don't want to read this.
Yeah. It was a political lesson, a geography lesson.
So, anyways, I just wanted to throw that in as, like, if you do see it, I think it was well worth it. I'm sure most libraries have it or whatever. But I'm hooked and I'm going to get the next book and for as long as I find it as compelling to read.
So would it be weird if I threw something else in now that was totally unrelated to your much better, important?
Hey, if it's good comics or good comics, it doesn't need to be about a serious thing.
This probably tests the standards of good comics in a way.
What is it, nudie comics? Those are good. Those can be good comics.
No, nothing like
that.
Tell
us about some fur holes, Kevin.
Come on. No. Captain Victory and the Galactic Rangers?
Yeah.
I talked about that last time.
No, the comic from the 80s.
Oh.
There's a comic store that always has, like, one of the biggest booths at Fan Expo, the Silver Snail, and they had, like, dollar books and stuff, like, underneath. Like, not on the main, like, rack where people are looking. You sort of have to scrounge underneath and break your back to get these issues.
If you can get through the layers.
Yeah, exactly. But anyways, I'm like, I find Captain Victory and the Galactic Rangers, but it's the original Kirby stuff. And I'm like, and then I was talking to someone about it, and they're like, yeah, nice to look at, but the story kind of questionable. And I'm like, I think they had maybe, I'm not sure how long the series goes, but they had like maybe 6, 7, or 8 issues, and I got the first 3. And I'm like, if nothing else, they'll be nice to look at. I thought that was kind of neat. And then the later issues, they start having backup features. So there's like a Miss Mystic by Neil Adams and stuff like that. So I'm like, oh. So kind of an interesting historical thing.
Yeah, I picked up issue number 2, which came out September 10th. But yeah, I like the new one. I haven't read the old one.
Well, that's what I thought it was kind of interesting in episode continuity. I'm like, yeah, I should really read the new one and then read the old one and see, you know, where they match up and, you know, how that all goes with our Kirby discussion and everything. I also picked up some Shadow. That was the Sienkiewicz Helfer stuff that they was recently mentioned on 11 o'clock comics. Because I'm like, sometimes they're not on my list, but you see something in the boxes and you're just like, oh, that looks interesting. That's for a dollar. I should pick this up.
Definitely.
Phil, what do you have?
Well, I guess that was about the end, eh?
Yeah, I think we've...
But I would like to tease next episode. I'm going to talk about the infamous Perfect Strangers origin comic book, where it shows where Balky came from.
The who?
Balky from the show Perfect Strangers.
He's I was an American wondering if sitcom. That's where you were going.
That is all.
Okay, that should be unique.
Hey, licensed comics are comics too, kids. They've got feelings too. And next time we will have the return of Super Steve.
I don't know.
We promise.
We think. I don't know. He keeps promising us, but
even if it's just his brain in a jar that's being projected onto a TV screen that talks, we'll have him.
Yes, yes. It'll be something out of Godland.
Or we can just take sound bites from old episodes and
well, he's probably said enough words. That's right. We can piece everything together and make a new Steve Raker.
But there won't be one like the original. But anyways, thanks for tuning in. You can find us on the Twitters. And Indie Comic Book Noise has its own Twitter feed, which Kevin is about to tell us what it is.
At Indie Comic Book N. And I posted a slew of pictures. Well, maybe not a literal slew. Maybe a few. Of all my loot from Fan Expo.
So give that a follow. We have our personal ones that we gave earlier. And you can find, we have a thread at the 11 o'clock comics forum. But until then, keep making mine independently comic book noised.
Keep on scaling that mountain of independent comics. Come on, Phil, you're supposed to say one too.
Oh, yay, Canada.
Boy, I've never known Phil to be so patriotic.
I know.
I feel a little, I don't know what to say. Should I stand up? Should I doff my toque? And
it'd be nice.
And respect.